This was months after Joseph was killed. But one day, I had to take flowers and a prayer card to where my son took his last breath of life. And again, I knew the distinct tree on that road. And his father went with me and my mom. And we rode out there. And it was just like a little before 5 o'clock. It was drizzling just a little bit, but it was a little before 5 o'clock. So we got in through the gates because they were opened, and we parked. And Bob and me and my mom, I laid the flowers down right by that tree and my prayer card. And I just prayed and cried. It was where my son took his last breath of life. And my mom and Bob, we just hugged and held each other and just cried and prayed.
Welcome to the Catch My Killer podcast, and thank you for listening. This is Mark. Since 2015, I have written a weekly column about unsolved homicides and true crime for the Clermont Sun in Ohio. Before discussing this week's episode, I would like to ask for your support. I'm looking for listeners to help support the podcast by buying me one $5 cup of coffee every month. This will help cover expenses that go with producing a successful podcast. If you would like to help, please visit catchmykiller.com and click on the donate link or on the buy me a coffee link. And if you cannot donate to the podcast, you can still help by sharing these stories with your friends and families through word of mouth and social media. I just need to reach the right person who will stand up and help these families get justice. This week I would like to give a shout out to Jerry Hood for her generous donation. Thank you so much for contributing to my coffee fund. And that's enough of the coffee business. This week's story involves the homicide of a 19-year-old Maryland man named Joseph Miranda. Joseph was born in 1987. After Joseph graduated from high school in 2005, he took a job with a landscaping company called Outside Unlimited. He decided to temporarily forego college and just work. He wanted to become a landscaping architect. Joseph did well and was promoted to foreman within months of starting. On July 20th, 2006, Joseph left home for work and said goodbye to his mother, Adrienne Miranda. She had no idea it would be the last time she would ever see him alive again. After arriving home from work that evening, Adrienne was surprised when she came home to an empty house. Usually Joseph would be home. She just assumed he was out with friends. But her life changed forever when she received a call from Joseph's father, Bob, at 11 that night. He had horrible news. Joseph was killed in an accident at his job. Adrienne then also received a call from the Maryland State Police notifying her that Joseph had died around 3:30 p.m. that afternoon. According to the Baltimore Sun, police learned that near the end of Joseph's shift on July 20, he was given a task that he needed to use the Bobcat to complete. The coworker said Joseph tried to remove the driver and jumped onto one of the wheels of the Bobcat, slipped and fell. He was then ran over. Although there were different witness statements, witnesses claimed Joseph and his coworker Paul Godwin had a disagreement over the Bobcat. This led to Godwin becoming angry and shoving Joseph into the path of the moving Bobcat. Godwin gave different accounts of what happened. In one version, he claimed they were just playing around and Joseph's death was accidental. Although no criminal charges were filed against the coworker, Adrienne vowed to fight for her son. She began her own investigation. Eventually, she learned that a state medical examiner named Dr. Ollie had received additional evidence and ruled the case a homicide. He contacted law enforcement and then wrote, "As the death was caused by the action of another person, the manner of death is best reclassified as a homicide." However, the state's attorney for Baltimore County, Scott Schellenberger, said, "There will be no further inquiry. No arrest, no grand jury, no trial, no criminal charges in Joseph's death." This was after he received notice of the case being reclassified as a homicide. This is the second part of a three-part story. The conclusion will be available tomorrow. For this part of the story, Adrienne discusses the frustration of learning her son was murdered, and the prosecutor refusing to take any action. So why would he not take action? According to Adrian, he continues to consider Joseph's death an accident and not a homicide, as the death certificate states. And now on with the story of Joseph Miranda as told by his mother, Adrian. Adrian would eventually have to find another attorney, as Craig Miller, her current attorney, wasn't able to help secure documentation about Joseph.
Craig Miller was just beside himself. There wasn't really anything he could do. He said, Adrian, he said, I want to try to help you, but they're like blocking me. They won't let me see any pictures. They won't tell me anything. And I know in good faith you tried everything. So I got Keith Franz, another attorney, and he was referred. He started getting involved in the case and seemed compassionate. He cared. He thought something isn't right here. So, and he came up to snuff with everything in the case, like in the different reporters on the news and the newspaper articles and all. When the meeting came, Lieutenant Dean Richardson, he had called me, and I had been going back and forth with emails with him. And I did put all my questions in writing. I think there were 42 questions. I had emailed him the questions, and the questions were justified. And I remember when my brother and I were driving out there, and I wanted to see the area where Outside Unlimited was. We saw signs on Route 30, which is a main road, and it said, Welcome to Carroll County. And on the other side, as you're coming this way, the other way, heading south, it says, Welcome to Baltimore County. And I knew just from a couple pictures that were sent from Moshe that where my son was killed on the dirt road, there was a tree line and a distinct tree adjacent to where my son lay on that road. I remember when we were driving out there and before we saw Welcome to Carroll County, and my brother and I both looked at each other and we said, Joseph wasn't even killed in Carroll County. I went to the library and we pulled all the parcels and the plats, 4195 St. Paul Road. And I got like all this information and everything looked like it was true that my son was killed in Baltimore County, not Carroll County. From the beginning, Baltimore County police should have handled it from the beginning. So when I met with Keith Franz, I told him, we've got these parcels and plats. He said, okay, well, let's just hold on to that, Adrian. Let's just go to this meeting. The meeting, they set it up for July 11th. I remember Lieutenant Richardson talked to me on the phone the day before. And he said, Adrian, tomorrow, he said, I'm just letting you know. He said, it doesn't matter who you bring. It was my family. It was like 12 of us on one side of the table and 12 of the Maryland State Police on the other side. And the day before, Lieutenant Dean Richardson, who was leading the meeting, said, Adrian, you can't have any reporters. You can't bring any media into the meeting. And he said, you can't record anything. He said, and I'm going to tell you, he said, I am not going up against the lieutenant colonel. He's second in line. He's an attorney, and I'm not going up against him. I said, what do you mean, Lieutenant Richardson? I said, you sound very different than the way you have sounded all along here, all these months with me. He said, I can't say anymore, but you'll see tomorrow. So we go to the meeting and I take the paperwork that I had. It was, and I knew Dr. Ali had written a letter to them and had changed it to undetermined with a strong possibility of homicide. And they had all had that. So it was Lieutenant Richardson sitting directly across from me. And then to his left was this Corporal David Kitzinger and then Detective Moore, who was over him. Then next to Detective Moore was this Lieutenant Colonel Ron Collison. Then on the end was Andy Aperstein, this attorney, and then Jim Brochin, who was a county executive, who brought Andy Aperstein. Then going around the table was Jerry Barnes, the state's attorney for Carroll County. And then next to him was Joe Dominick, who was an investigator for Jerry Barnes. And that's like everybody that was at the table. And then, because when we walked in this conference room, behind them, I didn't really see their faces because our backs were to them, were about, I want to say, 10 or 15 men, mostly in plain clothes, suits, probably some of them lawyers, maybe for the Maryland State Police. I don't know who they were, but they were there listening. And we weren't allowed to ask who they were or anything like that. They were just there. So anyway, Lieutenant Richardson starts the meeting and he says, we called this meeting, and it's fine that you're all here. We didn't know it would be this many, but it's fine that you're all here. but he said, we have this room for 1 hour. He said, Miss Miranda, your son's case is deemed an accident. I almost fell off the chair. And I said, what? You're telling me you've already made a decision and the state's attorney has made a decision that my son's case is deemed an accident when Dr. Ali has said it's undetermined with a strong possibility of homicide? I said, I don't understand. How can that be? We started asking questions. And then Keith Franz was with me. The attorney was representing us. And I said, this isn't adding up. I was told at one point, you're going to make an arrest. I said, we know the medical examiner asked for further investigation. Did you further investigate? And they were like, that's our decision. And I said, what is your decision based on? What are you saying happened to our son? What are you saying happened? And they're saying the spotter says that the bobcat was going forward and that your son jumped up, ran forward and jumped up on top of the front left tire and fell through. I said, fell through what? He just said, fell through. I said, that's not making any sense. I said, there's only backup tread marks. Dr. Ali says it's undisturbed brain matter. My son has no broken bones below his neck. I said, I've looked at a bobcat. My brother's looked at a bobcat. We actually went and saw a model G873. And I said, there's only 16 inches on the side tires between the two side tires and in a metal undercarriage that sits 10 inches from the ground. You know, what you're saying is impossible. My son would have broken legs, hips, back. I said, Dr. Ali says my son was prone, already on the ground. And they said, that's not how we see it. I said, they're medical examiners. What you're saying is impossible. Dr. Ali has already said it is impossible what you're saying. You're using an impossible scenario to close my son's case. How can that be? And so this corporal tries to draw this picture that made no sense at all on a board of the bobcat, and that the bobcat, he says, went backward then forward. And we're saying, no, because the tire isn't in front of my son. It's not in front of the, you know, the last movement. The back tire is not in front of my son's shoulder. It's behind it. And there's only backup tread marks. What you're saying is not possible. And my brother gets up. He's drawing and saying, this is what happened. We know Joseph was prone. Like, here's Joseph flat on the ground. And the driver says he was backing up. And as he's backing up, Joseph's already on the ground. And the rear left tire ends up behind Joseph's left armpit and the left side of his rib cage. And Joseph had no broken bones below his neck. He couldn't have jumped up and fallen through. There's nothing to fall through. It was obvious. What we were saying made sense, and what they were saying was impossible. So we sit back down. And they didn't know we knew about Detective Bechtel, but we knew about Detective Richard Bechtel because Dr. Ali had told us. So we look at Corporal Kitzinger because he worked right with Detective Bechtel. When Detective Bechtel went out there on October 27th, I believe it was, about 3 months after Joseph was killed, he went out there with Corporal Kitzinger and he interviewed the driver. He even took a Spanish interpreter just in case they needed, you know, like him to translate or anything like that, although Mr. Rubio spoke some English. But he had Mr. Rubio, the driver, get inside the bobcat, and Detective Bechtel, who was a senior detective, said, I want you to reenact everything that happened on the day that Joseph Miranda was killed. And Mr. Rubio said, of course. So he did. He got in the bobcat. He showed him like how he moved. He said, I was in the bobcat. He said, I backed up just about 3 or 4 feet, and he moved it. He showed him. He said, slightly turn the wheels slightly left, straighten out the bobcat, because he was going to go pick up the last load of dirt. So he was like 4 feet. He backed up, and when he backed up, that was when Joseph was killed. And so why are you all saying it was going forward? It wasn't going forward. So I say to Corporal Kitzinger, where is Detective Bechtel's report? He says, who's he? He's acting like he doesn't even know him. He worked right with him. I said, you have Dr. Ali's letter. I said, read the medical examiner's letter. They're experts. You know, they use science, facts, evidence, physics. So this Corporal Kitzinger pulls Dr. Ali's letter out of his pile of paper and says, here, you read it. And he throws it over to Bob and I. So Bob reads it aloud. And of course, I'm doing everything I can to hold back tears, but I couldn't. I'm crying because it does say there's undisturbed brain matter. His skull and face were deformed and crushed. And none of this is making sense. How can you close this? You're using a scenario that is not possible. That isn't what happened to my son. And my attorney, this Keith Fran, says, Miss Miranda doesn't even believe her son was killed in Carroll County. She has these parcels and these plats and everything that it truly looks like her son was killed in Baltimore County. Well, with that, the state's attorney, because the whole time this Jerry Barnes is just, he doesn't really say much of anything, or he's the prosecutor. He's just doodling on a like yellow notepad. He's just like doodling, looking up in the air. At that, when we said, we believe he was killed in Baltimore County, he starts screaming. I know my county. I know my county. I've lived here all my life. He was killed in Carroll County. Don't give me this crap. And he just gets up and runs out of the meeting. I couldn't make this stuff up if I tried. They just say, look, now the Brian PR, I will say, the one that is the reconstructionist, he does say, Mr. Miranda, he does say, I was never called. And we wonder, why wasn't he called? They do reconstructions all day, every day. Why? And he said, I was never called. He did say that he found it hard to believe that Joseph leaped from the back of the Bobcat to the front tire, jumped over the rear tire onto the front tire, and Paul Godwin is saying, and he fell through or fell underneath. He said, I would think that there would be flesh or blood or something like on the tires, and there isn't any, because my son was already flat on the ground. I said, my son doesn't nap or sunbathe on a dirt road. My son, he was flat on the ground at 4 o'clock in the afternoon on his stomach. Why? How did he get there? I asked Corporal Kitzinger to find out if anybody pushed my son. Did anybody touch my son? He just wouldn't answer me. So anyway, they ended it and they just said, the case is closed and it's an accident.
So let me see if I have this straight. Dr. Ali has ruled your son's death a homicide, but the state police have chosen to ignore the doctor and to just leave the case as an accident. That is so disturbing. This means there is a reason behind that decision. No one in their right mind believes this was an accident.
Oh yeah, they rule it as an accident, but the medical examiners, when Dr. Ali heard that they were saying Joseph jumped on it and went forward and this, that, and the other, Dr. Ali himself, well, he had more pictures, and then we knew that there were 91 pictures. So Dr. Ali and the chief medical examiner, Dr. David Fowler, they wrote a letter to the police and said, send us all the photographs, every one of them. They had to write a letter. And remember, I told you Detective Bechtel did go to Dr. Ali in October after he did his own reconstruction. And he said, this is foul play. Mr. Miranda was already on his stomach, and it backed up over him. The driver and Detective Bechtel gave Dr. Ali his report. Detective Bechtel's report said, this is foul play. And they asked also for them to polygraph Paul Godwin, who was the spotter, because they did believe he had pushed Joseph into it. But the Maryland State Police, they didn't care what the medical examiner said. So David Collins, who's a reporter with WBAL here in our local news, Channel 11, it's NBC. He's a good reporter, and he knew about it. And I have several CDs of news, like where I was on the news, and they came and interviewed me. I still have the CDs and everything. And they knew that I said, one of them said to me, Miss Miranda, we know that you believe foul play was involved, but this was early on, but still that we did suspect foul play. And they said, will you ever believe it's an accident? I said, never. I had a Metro Rentals, which was where the Bobcat was purchased from, Metro Rentals. That was something that came from Moshe. And They probably didn't even know or didn't even care what they sent to me, but they did. I asked for their reports and they sent me what they had. And on the Metro Rentals invoice for that particular Bobcat, it says backup alarm and control kit to be installed at a later date. So that told me that the Bobcat didn't have a backup alarm. So it wasn't in compliance. My son was quick. And as soon as they put that gear in reverse, even before they move, that beep, it goes off. My son could have just jumped out of the way. But at the end of this meeting, Corporal Kitzinger, he comes over, my brothers are standing beside me, and he says, "Your son was killed by a bobcat." I said, "No, my son was not killed by a bobcat. My son was killed by a person. My son was killed by the spotter, and you know it." And he said he was killed by a bobcat. And my brothers were, "Let's go over here, Adrian, move away from him." And he walked away.
It seems as if Dr. Ollie has been mostly ignored by your prosecutor, and the ruling hasn't led to an arrest. Has the homicide ruling changed how people feel about this case?
Yeah, because Dr. Ollie went there with his forensic and scientists too. He got in the Bobcat and wanted to see how it maneuvered. He drove it, and he even took a mannequin. He was going to use a mannequin to see what would happen if somebody tried to jump on the left front, whatever. But he didn't even need to use the mannequin. He said, "This is impossible. There's no way Mr. Miranda jumped on the front tire. There's no way. He had no broken bones below his neck. He's 5'11". A contortionist couldn't do it. It's no way that happened. No way. Impossible. What they're using is impossible." Do they understand what impossible means? And I remember after that closing meeting on that day, my attorney did say, "Will you get everything to Miss Miranda?" And he just said, "Yes, we will." But Lieutenant Richardson, at the end of the day, when we were leaving, he said, "I'm sorry about this that happened here today." And I knew all along he was trying. And a couple months before all this, I remember there was something in the paper about Lieutenant Dean Richardson. And for some reason, they never really gave him a reason. They were going to transfer him to Garrett County, Maryland, which was like 5 hours away from his home. And Garrett County is like real cold and snowy. And they were going to transfer him to that barrack from the Westminster barrack, like with no explanation. Like, and I remember I said, "Why are they doing this, Lieutenant Richardson?" And he just said, "Adrian, I don't really know." And then, I don't know, I guess they ended up not transferring him. And so then I exercised my Freedom of Information Act rights, and I sent my letter and request to Central Records with the Maryland State Police, and I got everything. It took them months. I remember Denise Scheer and Ida Williams. It took them months to get me everything, but they did. And the only thing they didn't give me was Detective Bechtel's report. And they kept saying, "There isn't a Detective Bechtel's report. It doesn't exist." I said, "Yes, it does." They said, "How do you know?" I said, "Because the medical examiner doesn't lie. He has it. He has a copy of it. He told us about it." And Detective Bechtel is the one, Senior Detective Richard Bechtel is the one that went to him and showed him after he did his own reconstruction and interviewed the driver. So they kept saying they couldn't find it. I ended up calling Internal Affairs. I explained who I was and what had happened and that I knew this report existed. And Corporal Kitzinger was the one who went with Detective Bechtel when he did the reconstruction and made his report. And I said, "You need to find it." I said, "I'm entitled to all the reports with my Freedom of Information Act rights." So he said, "Okay." He said, "We'll look into it." Well, I didn't hear back from him the next day. So I think it was the day after I called him and I said, "Can you give me an update?" When he said, "Oh, we found the report." And he said, "Don't call us again." And hung up on me. Then they did send it to me, and I do have the report. We do know that there are only backup tread marks We do know that Paul Godwin did say he was pushing. He got irritated, and he did push my son. And evidently what had truly happened, and we looked at what the driver said and all that in the reports. So the driver says that, because Paul Godwin wants to say, he gives like four different versions. The one who killed my son, he was the same age as Joe, 19. He was a laborer. He was on the residential side. Joe was on the commercial side. And he watched Joe get promoted twice to a foreman. Joe was popular. He was well-liked. And we think it was like a hate crime. Jealousy, envy. And that's what we think. We truly believe that. And what had happened when we read all the reports.
So the spotter was irritated. That was his excuse for killing Joseph. It sounds more like a homicide than an accident.
Oh, yeah.
I still find it difficult to believe that Paul Godwin was never charged with killing your son. Do you know why he hasn't been prosecuted?
$1 million question. When the Maryland State Police closed the case, and then I asked for a survey to be done because I felt positive my son was killed in Baltimore County and the Maryland State Police should have never had it at all. When the case was closed, I had this attorney, Keith Franz, and he wanted to take the case, and he was there at the closing meeting. He witnessed all of this, and he knew Scott Schellenberger, and Scott Schellenberger was just elected as the prosecutor for Baltimore County, the state's attorney for Baltimore County that year, 2006. And I had said to Keith, you need to ask, or I can ask, or whatever, but Schellenberger should have had this case from the beginning because my son was killed in Baltimore County, his jurisdiction. The Maryland State Police should have never had it. He said, I understand, Adrian, but like, we have to have proof. We have to prove it was Baltimore County. So I took my parcels and my plats. He set up a meeting for me with Scott Schellenberger, and I met with him, and I took the parcels and the plats and the tree line where it had that tree and where it shows the bobcat. Like, Joseph was already removed, lifted it, you know what I mean, and brought it back down. Put the bobcat by the tree and the parcels and the plats and all. And he said, he'll look into it. So he ends up writing me a letter, and the letter says he has looked at the information that I gathered for him, and that is inconclusive that your son was killed in Baltimore County. I wrote him back and said inconclusive was not acceptable. I said my son wasn't killed in two counties. He was killed in one county or the other. We need to do a survey. He wouldn't do a survey. So I thought, well, okay, if you don't do a survey, I'll do one. I called the Board of Public Works, and he said, Miss Miranda, you're a Baltimore County resident. You're entitled to, he said, I will send you the map, and I will send you each marking code of when the stones were laid, when the line was drawn, when it was Baltimore County, Carroll County. So he sent me this big map. He sent me the 2-page document. Each stone had a code number to it. And so I had been talking with this man who was like a surveyor. And he said, I've got this big map. I said, I can see on this big map, like the tree. And I had the one picture of that very distinct tree. And I said, would you come to my home and look at the map and tell me how you read this? And he said, of course I will. So he did. He came. I put the map out, the one photograph, the map, and he said, Adrian, there's no doubt your son was killed in Baltimore County. He said, there's no doubt. So I told Keith Franz, the attorney, that I have the confirmation of a surveyor, of somebody that does this, and there's a Baltimore County surveyor, and that's who Scott Schellenberger needed confirmation from. So he still was hesitant. He still didn't want to do it. And I said, this doesn't make sense. Why is he refusing to do this? I just kept saying, I'm going to do it. I'm going to get this information to somebody else because this is all wrong. So Keith emailed Scott Schellenberger, and Schellenberger finally agreed to do the survey. And in the emails, it was just all very strange because Scott Schellenberger says that he's got to make sure they have to figure out a back way to go in because the property owner might have issues with us doing a survey. I'm thinking to myself, this is a criminal investigation and they're worried about Joe Medved, like saying you can't come on my property. So I'm thinking, this is outrageous. But anyway, they did do the survey, and Scott Schellenberger wanted to tell me himself, and he did write and call and say, yes, your son was killed in Baltimore County. And he said, I will take the case, and he talked to my brother, too, and a completely independent investigation from what the Maryland State Police had done with their own investigators and have them, like their detectives and all, and use some of what Maryland State Police had done, but they were going to do their own independent investigation. And so I think it was December 2007, Baltimore County Police called and set up an appointment with me. It was Detective Carol Bollinger, and also over him was this Corporal Lawrence Gick. So they come to my door. I know they were coming, and they stayed in my kitchen for about 2.5 hours. And they were asking me questions. I was explaining what we knew, that it was Paul Godwin that says pushing. There was pushing. He was irritated. He still says it was going forward. But he says, at one time, my son jumped in the bucket and tried to pull the driver out. Another time, he said he tried to jump in the seat. What, to sit on the driver's lap? Another time, he says he was yelling and pulling the driver. And Antonio Rubio says, never did Joseph do anything like that. Paul Godwin is just trying to blame the victim to cover his own butt. That's all he's trying to do. And none of that ever happened, ever. He is a liar and a killer. So these Baltimore County police, they come. They're here for about 2.5 hours. I explain everything to them. I explain the physics. I even get down on the ground, like saying down on my kitchen floor, saying my son was flat on the ground already. Here's where the left tire was, like behind him, behind my son's left shoulder, and only his face, head and neck were crushed. He had no broken bones below his neck. All of that's very important. And because you couldn't do that. You couldn't, there's nothing to fall through. If you saw the bobcat and there's an undercarriage 10 inches off the ground.
Basically, the driver called out Godwin as a liar because he said Joseph never tried to remove him from the bobcat.
If you saw the bobcat and you watched it in motion, you would understand there's nothing to fall through. And even if my son, say it was going forward, he would never go jump on the top of a tire. And Paul Godwin, when he was asked in deposition, he says at 12 o'clock, that's the top of the tire, my son would be up ahead on the left on his stomach to the side of the bobcat. He wouldn't be underneath the bobcat. Just never happened. And they're listening to me. And I said, can't you interview Paul Godwin? He needs to be questioned because I got all the reports. And the police were supposed to polygraph Paul Godwin. They were getting ready to do a polygraph because Gary Bechtel, who happens to be Detective Bechtel's brother, was the polygrapher. And I got all the reports. I read every word of everything. And he was supposed to polygraph Paul Godwin. But when I asked Gary Bechtel, where's the polygraph? Because I called him and talked to him. He said the polygraph was never done. I said, why? He said, because we were told not to polygraph him. I said, by who? He said, Lieutenant Colonel Collison, on July 11th with the Maryland State Police, I did look at Lieutenant Dean Richardson because I thought we had developed a relationship and that he believed me and all that. And I know that he did. He still had to say this is closed. Everything that happened with me saying how this is impossible, why are you doing this? And at the end of all this, when we asked where's Detective Bechtel's report and the other one saying, who was he? At the end of that whole meeting, I said to Lieutenant Dean Richardson, Lieutenant, everything that happened here today, who is responsible for everything that happened here today? And he pointed right to him and he said, he is. And he pointed to Lieutenant Colonel Ron Collison. When the Baltimore County Police were here, they said, do you have any other names for us to interview? I said, Zachary Bradman, because he was one of the first to go to my son. He was one of the supervisors that worked with Joe. And he was, my understanding, one of the first to go to Joe when Joe was killed, Zachary Bradman. And I saw Detective Carol Ballinger write the name on his yellow lined notepad sitting at my kitchen table. And I said, Roger Schwab. And Roger Schwab was the one who was the manager, the supervisor for Paul Godwin on the day my son was killed. And I explained also why Roger Schwab needed to be interviewed. I said, can't you interview Paul Godwin? They said, no, he's lawyered up. We can't interview him. Then when the Baltimore County Police came, when I'd given them the names, he wrote them on his notepad, and Roger Schwab and Zachary Bradman, but they wrote the other names down. They said, Miss Miranda, we need to go. I said, well, there's still more I have to tell you. There's still other names. There's still more I have to tell you. They said, we'll be back. And I believed them. I said, okay, thank you so much. They never came back, and they really never did anything.
By this point, Adrienne Miranda and her family were frustrated with the Maryland State Police and the Baltimore County Police. Neither agency seemed interested in helping the family get justice. And when the local prosecutor eventually decided not to help the family either, they didn't have anyone else to turn to for help. The young man was murdered and no one seems to care.
We were promised an independent investigation by Scott Schellenberger, who has the case. And during that time, also, I got another attorney. When Keith Franz had the case, and he was the one that sat in at that closing meeting, listened to all of it, and I told him that I had all the documents. I finally got everything. All the documents, all the pictures, all that. I had these two white binders that were from the Maryland State Police, and when it was the Central Records, like sending me everything. They did have to call, I had to call Internal Affairs to get Detective Bechtel's report, but I did finally get it. But anyway, so I had everything. And so Keith Franz says, I want you to come and bring everything that you have, and we'll take it from there. But I want to see everything you have. And we said, okay. So Bob and I planned to meet with him, and I was going to take all my documents. And Keith emailed me. I still have all the emails, thousands. Keith emailed me, and he said, Adrienne, I still want you and Bob to come at 10:30. He said, but I am going to have to take a meeting, a conference call, that it will probably take about 25 or 30 minutes. And is that okay? Like if you and Bob just wait for me in the conference room when I remove myself for about a half an hour to take a call? And I said, sure. You know, I wrote back, sure, it's fine. So he said, okay. And I wondered about that a little bit. But anyway, so Bob and I go to his office. We sit down and I start taking out the binders and the documents. And I start showing Keith everything, the report. I let him, if he wanted to look at the photographs, there were some photographs in there I knew that I couldn't look at. I showed him Detective Bechtel's report. I showed him the timeline. I showed him Trooper Hudako's report. And Trooper Hudako's report was very telling in the sense that he was the first one to arrive at the scene. And in his report, it says, Joseph was found prone, flat on his stomach, his legs sticking out back of the bobcat, like Joseph's completely center underneath the bobcat. And the left rear tire is behind Joseph's left armpit. He describes Joseph's face. You know, Joseph's purple, completely, his face completely deformed, brain matter. And he says Joseph's hands are at his hips. My son's hands are resting at his hips. Now, what would that tell you? If my son is flat on the ground, his hands are resting at his hips. My son was hit or knocked so hard that I believe my son was unconscious when he went down. Because typically, if you're going down to the ground, you're going to put your arms out to try to break going down. So Paul Godwin either knocked him hard, he could have, I don't know, but he pushed Joseph like it was a repeated motion. In other words, they had already loaded and unloaded 7 loads of dirt. And Paul Godwin was there the entire time. So the driver, he drives the Bobcat forward. He picks up a load of dirt to the pile of dirt with the bucket. He turns the machine around. He lifts up the bucket and dumps it into the dump truck. He brings the bucket down. He backs up and turns it like slightly to the left to straighten it out to go forward again. And he did that 7 times. They had dumped and unloaded 7 loads of dirt. It was a repeated motion. Paul Godwin knew how that Bobcat was going to maneuver and when. So what I'm saying is that in the police reports, the driver says that, and Eric McGalla was Joseph's direct supervisor. And it says, because they were all, Eric was interviewed too. A lot of them were interviewed. But Eric McGalla says that when Joseph came back that day from the Windsor Mill Middle School, it was around like, 3:30 in the afternoon. And he was standing there with Rian Hunan, and Joseph was friends with all of them. And because I remember he would talk about the guys like at work, and he liked them. They were nice. He was popular at work. They liked Joe. And in the police report, it says that Joseph got back with his crew about 3:30 in the afternoon, and he was standing, with Eric McGalla, his supervisor, and Rian, who's another foreman. And Eric McGalla said to Joe, "We need to load 20 trees for that school tomorrow morning. We need to load them tonight because that school's going to be opening first week in September or whatever. We have to load 20 trees. He said, "Go get that Bobcat. They're just loading dirt." So Joseph said, "Okay." So Joseph's following the instructions of his supervisor, Eric McGalla. So you clearly read in the reports, Joseph walks up to where the road is that the Bobcat is on, and Paul Godwin, the spotter. And as Joseph is walking up, a truck drives by that has 3 markers in it. And the truck that drives by waves to Joe. And Joe waves back. The truck came down and turned left and went down around to where the garage is, the bay area, and turned back around so they could park the trailer. And in that truck where they were parking the trailer was Marcelino Sanchez, Pedro Churez, who sat in the back, and Jose Guadalupe, who sat on the driver's side, on the passenger side. And Marcelino Sanchez was the driver. And in the police report, and there were the ones that had waved to Joe, and Joe waved to them. And they were parking the trailer. And as they were parking the trailer, like if you look to the right, you could see the road where Joe was killed. There's a tree line there, but the trees have some space between them. And they knew when they drove down, the only person on that road was the driver of the Bobcat and the spotter, Paul Godwin. They were the only ones there. So you see in the police report that while they're parking, Pedro Churez screams. He's in the back seat of the truck looking out the right side. He just screams. And Jose Guadalupe, who's sitting in front of him on the passenger side, goes, "Oh my God, I can't believe what just happened. I can't believe what just happened to Joe." So Marcelino Sanchez, he starts getting nervous because he's, what just happened? And he goes, "Oh my God." And so they park. Jose Guadalupe gets out of the truck and runs to Joe, runs. And he sees that Joe's crushed to death underneath the Bobcat. And he sees Joe's dead. So he runs to try to get another supervisor, and he grabs Zachary Brodman, who's another supervisor. So Zachary Brodman goes, so Jose Guadalupe was the first one to run to Joe. Then Zachary Brodman says he didn't even know it was Joe. He had to like dial Joe's cell phone, and it rang in his pocket. It went off in his pocket, he says. That's how he knew it was Joe. He couldn't even recognize it was my son. And then they said Joe Medved came, and then he ran back into the office And then he said, call 911. And then he called 911 from his cell phone. And evidently, Joe Medved, he moved my son's arm. He moved my son's like right arm. Somehow he got to his right arm and moved it. And he said that he did that, it says, to get a pulse, to see if Joe had a pulse, which is hard to believe because everybody else said, you just knew Joe was clearly dead. When the Baltimore County police got there, they were told to go away. But when the police got there, they put up yellow crime scene tape around the area where my son lay crushed to death underneath that bobcat. They put up yellow crime scene tape. And do you know, the Maryland State Police let the owner, Joe Medved, get inside the yellow crime scene tape? That's disturbing a crime scene. The FBI even told me that. They said, Ms. Miranda, that's a felony. That's disturbing a crime scene. That's against the law. But nobody will do anything. And we know that he did. We even have his deposition. He even says it in his deposition. Like he thinks it's okay. And there is a 4-inch drag mark. He got in and he dragged my son's right foot forward. I have the pictures. 4 inches forward to try to create like the bobcat was going forward because it didn't have a backup alarm. And he didn't want to be sued. How dare he touch my son?
So whatever became of the prosecutor's independent investigation, was one ever completed?
They didn't. After they left, they did never come back to my house. And I would call. It was the homicide squad in Baltimore County. And it was Lieutenant Jim Monahan. He was like the head of the homicide squad. And then it was Lawrence Gick and Detective Carol Bollinger. And I think Kirk Higdon was the other one's name. But anyway, so I would try to see, did they have any updates for me? And they still kept saying, they're still working on it. They were going to interview Zachary Brodman. And I explained why. He was the second one to go to Joe and all that. And also, did he see Joe Medved do anything? And they knew why they needed to talk to Paul Godwin, because he needed to still be asked the questions properly. And not that a polygraph, I know, holds up in court, but they use a polygraph for some reason. It's still a tool the police use. So they end up saying they're done. I one time called and talked to Lieutenant Monahan, and I asked him, could he give me any updates? And he just said, no. He said, still trying to interview a couple people. He just said, we'll get back to you. But just, they didn't seem really interested. And it was supposed to be a completely independent investigation. I find out that Paul Godwin is no longer lawyered up. Joe Medved had gotten him David Irwin for an attorney who is a very high-powered criminal defense attorney. Why did he get him for Paul Godwin if they said it's an accident? And the next thing we know, we find out, is that Paul Godwin is no longer lawyered up. David Irwin doesn't have the case anymore. So maybe his parents couldn't afford it anymore. Joe Medved decided we didn't need it. He was connected enough, or they didn't need it or whatever. I don't know. So I emailed Lieutenant Monahan and I said, will you please interview Paul Godwin now? He's no longer lawyered up and you can ask him more questions and the appropriate questions. You now have a lot of information. You're the medical examiners. Will you question him? No, we won't. I said, why? I said, why will you not question him? He's not lawyered up anymore. They said, we just won't. And he hung up on me. We just won't. And they closed the case saying it was an accident. And Scott Schellenberger, he doesn't care what the medical examiners say, even though they did change it to a homicide by an assault. An assault is a felony alone.
When did the death certificate get changed from accidental to homicide?
In 2010.
So for the past decade or so, it's been legally declared that Joseph was murdered. I just cannot understand why law enforcement won't do anything about the situation. Something just seems off in this case.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All the medical examiners agreed, all of them, all 12, and the chief, David Fowler. And to this day, I called Central Records and sent in my paperwork to get the police report for the Baltimore County Police Report. It might have been 25 pages long. They hardly did anything. And so I called for a meeting with Scott Schillenberger and Bollinger. Police chief at that time was Jim Johnson. Now it's Melissa Hyatt, but it was Jim Johnson. And Kirk Higdon was there and a couple other people with Baltimore County. And I had gotten these Justice for Joseph t-shirts made. And we wore t-shirts. Because one time I rallied around the Baltimore County Courthouse with signs saying Justice for Joseph. And I remember Scott Schillenberger sent me an email or something, and he said, doesn't matter what you do or how many people you call, I'm not changing my decision. And when we all went in the meeting, I'm saying my 84-year-old mom, like walking in on a walker, and the rest of us, and I had some questions. He agreed to a meeting. First, he said it was just going to be him and Detective Bollinger. And I said, I don't understand. Why is it just you and Detective Bollinger? What about Jim Monahan? What about the chief? What about Kirk Higdon, the other ones that were involved? I think the other one should be there too. So he said, okay, we're going to have to postpone the meeting. So anyway, we finally met at the courthouse, and I took the information that I needed to take in there, and we introduced ourselves. And one of the first things I said, because I saw the police report, and I knew that Detective Bollinger and Lawrence Gick, who came to my home, never interviewed Zachary Brodman or Roger Swarp. And I watched them write their names down. Do you know what I mean? And I told them why they needed to be interviewed. I said, these two individuals who were employees on the day my son was killed at Outside Unlimited, I said, I gave you the names Roger Schwab and explained why, and Zachary Brodman, and to please talk with them and interview them again. And even explained why. And I said, and in your police report, you never did. Like, you never interviewed them. Why? And Detective Bollinger kept shaking his head. No, you didn't. I said, yes, I did. I said, yes, I did, Detective Bollinger. I saw you. Watch the names. I know what I said to you in my kitchen. I saw on your, write them down on your yellow notepad. I even gave you, like, where Roger Schwartz lived. And I said, Corporal Gick, you were right there. You saw. And Detective Bollinger just kept saying no. No, I didn't. And I said, why are you being untruthful? I said, well, Detective Bollinger, and then, like, gets up. He just gets up out of the seat, and Scott Schillenberger, he says, I'm not doing this. I'm out of here. He just gets up and leaves. And then Scott Schillenberger tells us all to get out. Just get out. This is the state's attorney. We left, and I had depositions. I ended up getting another attorney. I did want to just finish this. When I went to Keith Franz, when it was during the winter, he was the one that was at the closing meeting with the Maryland State Police, saw everything that happened. When Bob and I were there, and it was like the week of Christmas, he told us beforehand he was going to have to take a meeting. It took 25 minutes or so, and we said, sure, that's fine. And I started taking out my documents and showing him and this, that, and the other. He said, okay. He said, I see, Adrian. He said, I see what you have. He said, okay. He said, I'm going to go take my call. He said, just give me about 25 minutes, 30 minutes, I'll be back. And we said, okay. So I left the room, went into some other room, you know, closed the door, went to some other room. And Bob and I were just, I don't know, doesn't this feel strange? And we were like, yeah, like it does feel strange. I don't know, of all times, I'm just saying, it just seems strange. In other words, if he had to take this important meeting or whatever, he could have like made our appointment another time, like later in the day or earlier in the morning. It just seemed a little odd. And he saw what I had. I had all this proof of everything, of the Maryland State Police records and Detective Bechtel's report that does show exactly what happened and what the driver says. Anyway, Keith Franz comes out and he says, Adrian, put your documents away. Because I was saying I was going to sue the state police. I was going to sue them. And I was going to sue them for their negligence, for their perjury, for their obstruction of justice. And he said, put your documents away. You cannot sue the state police. Well, I had talked to another, his name was Michael Silvestri, like, who was with me on the case, who believed everything. He was a reporter. But he said to me, I remember at one time, Adrian, you can sue anybody, you darn well please. Don't let anybody ever tell you you can't sue anybody. You can sue anybody. And I know that's a fact. You can sue anybody. You should have a merit. Your case should have merit. But I certainly thought I had a lot of merit against the state police and against Moshe. But anyway, Keith Franz comes out after his meeting and says, Adrian, put your documents away. You can't sue the Maryland State Police. And Bob and I are just looking at him. He says, no, you can't. He says, now, Adrian, you'll get $1.5 million. Well, $2 million with Bob, but you cannot sue the state police. I was like, I looked at Bob like wide-eyed. And he goes, now, I want you to think about what I just said. And he grabbed our coats. He like rushed us out to the elevator and pushed the door for the elevator doors to open. We're grabbing the boxes and the documents and my black satchel with documents and all. And so we get in the elevator and Keith Franz is looking at me like square in the eyes. And he said, Adrian, did you hear what I said? Did you hear every word that I said? And we pressed the button and I said, thank you, Keith. Have a good day. That's all I said to him. And we're walking to our cars. And I said, Bob, do you know what just happened? He said, I think I do. He said, I think we were just like offered a payoff.
And that concludes part 2 of the Joseph Miranda story. Please be sure to listen to the conclusion tomorrow. This case has so many tentacles. For one, how difficult could it have been for law enforcement to settle on jurisdiction? Apparently, no one knew in this case because the Maryland State Police erroneously took charge of this case. And then you have the death certificate ruling where over 10 different doctors agreed Joseph was murdered. Yet, Prosecutor Schellenberger won't prosecute the man who killed Joseph. Why is this? There has to be a legitimate reason, but it's unknown. Adrian has met with both the prosecutor and law enforcement and achieved nothing. Sadly, that's typically what happens when dealing with government officials. Nothing ever gets settled. If you would like to know more about the murder of Joseph Miranda, please visit pleasedoyourjob.com and consider signing the petition to get justice for Joseph. I will also provide this information in the case notes. And if you are a parent, law enforcement official, friend, or relative seeking justice for an unsolved homicide case, please visit my website and complete the contact form or contact me through Facebook. Thank you for listening.